Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and welcome to another episode here on March 6, 2014. Very excited tonight. We're going to be starting a brand new segment of the show I've been talking about now for the last several months called Coach's Corner, and I've got my panel in waiting here, and I'm going to bring them out here in just a quick second, but a little bit later in the program, I'm going to be joined by a young lady by the name of Phyllis Bursey. She's going to be talking about a product, actually, that I was introduced to down at the PGA Merchandising Show in Orlando a few months ago called Swing Lube, and it's really an all-natural pain medication, if you will. It's actually all-natural, so there's no medication in it, but she's going to be coming on talking a little bit later in the program about that, and I'll give you my own personal story and background on how this came about, but I think it'll be interesting. And also I'm going to be talking a little bit about the new show that's going to be starting up in April called The Women of Golf. That's going to be airing Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time beginning on April 8th. And I'm going to be joined here and there by, of course, none other than LPGA professional Cindy Miller is going to be joining me with that program as well and getting a lot of excitement. And, of course, the LPGA is going to be backing me up on this with some great professionals, not only from the LPGA Tour, but also some of the teaching professionals are going to be coming on as some guests on the program. So I'm really excited about that, and I'll talk that a little bit about that a little bit later on. But let me bring out my first inaugural panel, if you will, for Coach's Corner. First off, we've got Mr. Tom Patry, PGA teaching professional, and he was, of course, one of the top 100 teachers by Golf Magazine, and he's also the author of the six-spoke approach to better golf learning. His website, if you want to get a little bit more about Tom, is at tompatry.com. That's P-A-T-R-I.com. And following him, of course, is Mr. Chuck Evans, also a PGA teaching professional and top 100 teacher by Golf Magazine. And he's also authored a book, How to Build Your Golf Swing. And you can get a hold of Chuck, a little more information at www.chuckevansgolf.com. And rounding out the panel tonight, of course, is Mr. Gary Occhino. He's also a PGA golf professional, and he's just released a brand new book, which he authored, called Play Golf Like the Pros. Gentlemen, welcome to Golf Talk Live and Coach's Corner.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks,
Ted.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, Ted.
All right. Glad to have you guys. I've been very excited about this. And I just want to thank you guys before we get going for coming and agreeing to do this. I think it's going to be a great segment to the program. A lot of people have indicated that they wanted some help with their game, so we're going to see if we can do that for them tonight. And just to remind the listeners...
We're ready to go.
Okay, I know you are. So just bear with me. Just let me read out a couple more things, and we'll get going on this. Just to remind everybody, if you want to call live into the program, especially during the Coach's Corner segment, you can do so. The number is area code 646-716-4667. Or if you're a little shy and you want to submit your questions in, which we've already got a few here going, you can submit your questions to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Let me just give you a quick rundown here on Coach's Corner, and then we're going to begin. Basically, what we're going to do is every Thursday night, you're going to have an opportunity to call or email your questions to the program and, of course, pick the brains of some of the best coaches and teaching pros in the business. Each week, we'll have a different panel, and we're going to cover a new topic each week, plus help some of you weekend warriors as well. As I said, you can call during the live broadcast, which is from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, or that's 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for you on the East Coast, or you can email your questions at the email questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Here's how the segment's going to work. Each week I'll pose some questions to the panel for discussion. I'll start the discussion, then rotate around to each of the members for some general comments, and then open the floor to some additional comments. Afterwards, we'll take hopefully some live calls and or email questions from the audience. So this is going to be your opportunity to join in the discussion. So again, feel free to call in any time during the live broadcast from 6 p.m. Central Standard Time to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. That number one last time is area code 646-716-4667, or you can email to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Okay, I'm ready to go. You guys ready?
Okay. Ready to go.
Yep.
All right. Okay, good stuff. What I wanted to do for the first program is, as I mentioned to all of you off air, was really to start golf from a beginner's perspective. And I had a gentleman that I spoke to recently. His name is Bill, and he's about 35 years old. And I'll give you a little bit about the scenario here. It's very simple, and what he's asking. I'm going to give some feedback and why I feel the way I do, and then I'm going to open it up to you again. We're going to start with Tom, then move on to Chuck, and then and Gary, and then we'll rotate it out after that. Bill wrote into me, and then I followed up with a phone call, and he's brand new to the game. He's really not sure where to begin. He's been told by a lot of his buddies that the best way to take up the game is to obviously to commit to taking some lessons. And he really sort of posed three questions. Number one, he wanted to know if that was true, if that was the best way to sort of go about it. He's also been given some sort of secondhand or hand-me-down clubs from a friend of his. He wants to know if those are okay to use. And mainly his main important question is where does he start? And so I'm going to start out first off to the first question that I'm going to answer, Bill, because I know you're tuning in tonight, yes, it is true. I think the best way to start out for somebody that's never played the game before is to get connected with a teacher professional. If you've got one in your immediate area, whether it be at a local course or even at another facility, definitely it's worthwhile taking some lessons. And what I would suggest, if you've never taken a golf lesson before, if you have the opportunity, depending on where you're from, if you have maybe multiple teachers within a close proximity, you might want to go and talk to a few of them before you actually commit to the lesson. So just kind of get a feel for that individual and see whether or not there's any sort of chemistry there between the two. And I think that's a good idea to start. As far as hand-me-down clubs, they're okay to use, but I would say that it depends on the circumstance. Being brand new to the game, I would say that it's okay if you're not sure how it's going to go. As an example, if you feel that you're just starting out and you're not sure whether you're going to commit to the game, you certainly don't want to go out and commit a large investment to some new club. So I would say, for now, stick with the hand-me-downs. And if you feel that golf is somewhere that you want to go and in a direction you want to take, then you want to be fitted and get a set of your own and be fitted properly by your local professional. And where do you start? Well, the first thing, as I said, what you want to start with is you want to meet with a couple of PGA professionals in your area, set up an appointment, talk to them, get an idea, let them know what it is that you're looking to accomplish, and get some feedback from them. Make some notes. Don't be afraid to make some notes in front of them. But go and see maybe two or even three if you have that ability in your area, and then go from there. Tom, I'm going to throw it to you first. Would you like to add anything to that, or?
Yes, I think you covered that pretty well. I mean, it's a really hard game to break into. It can be an intimidating game for somebody who's never played it before. So I think the chemistry aspect of finding somebody you can deal with is very, very important. I think you made a great point there. When you talk to somebody for the first time in golf's a new arena, even going to a club for the first time can be an intimidating thing. So, I mean, sure. Feeling comfortable in the setting and feeling comfortable with the person in front of you, I think, is vital. I think you made a great point there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about Chuck? Before I go to you, what about as far as clubs? I mentioned very briefly he's gotten a set of hand-me-downs from a buddy of his. Now, obviously, you know, without knowing Bill's height and things like that, and obviously we know he's not been fitted properly with them. I don't have a problem if somebody's brand new to the game, if he wants to kind of feel it out to see if he's going to be committed to it before he goes out and invests into a set of his own clubs. And at that point, of course, he could be fitted properly. But in that particular scenario, I don't have a problem with that. Now, if he's somebody that definitely has made a commitment to play, then he needs to go and get his own, or at least needs to, you know, get them readjusted to play his game and fit his style and his build. Chuck, what your thoughts on that?
Well, I would, you know, after Bill has interviewed, a few teachers to see who he can, you know, best meld with, most of the teachers, most of the shops are going to have demo clubs anyway.
Right.
So I would suggest that you use some of the clubs in the on the demo set, especially for your lessons. That'll help the teacher kind of blend the club with the player so that he doesn't get into any bad habits as far as trying to make an adjustment because of the club. That would be the least expensive way to do it. And then you'll have a way to go again, once they've spent some time together, they'll know by then what the shaft length should be, the grip size, the head design, I mean, all of those things, length, loft, lie. And you'll be way ahead of the game there. I've had too many people come in with secondhand clubs, especially
right.
juniors and especially women, that
yeah.
have had clubs cut down and handed to them. And they can still, you know, it doesn't matter how good you make them make a motion, the club just doesn't fit their motion. So I'd suggest using some of the demo clubs that are available through the pro or the course to find one that really works that the pro can recommend. Then once you decide
right.
you go into the game, you have it basically nailed because you've already got your length, your lie angle, everything there, and then you just order your clubs.
Right. Now, what would you now, obviously, in a case like this, let's before we get into how he should go about, you know, starting the process, I want to stick on the equipment here just real quickly. Is it better for him once he selects some clubs, and again, without having to get into too much of an investment, you know, should he sort of scale back a little bit and not, you know, obviously we're not going to expect him to be loaded up with the top equipment, but, you know, what should he be looking to do as far as when he does gets ready to make a purchase? Sort of a mid-range set that's, you know, not necessarily the bottom of the rack, but not necessarily the high-caliber clubs either, and he may not be ready for that, and that's a pretty big investment.
Well, and again, it's going to depend a lot on the person, obviously. You know, some mm-hmm. people have more means than others. Do they
right.
want to go out and buy a set of, I'm not going to mention any names, but they're made in Japan.
No, I know.
And they're $3,000 for a set of irons. I'm not suggesting
right.
that at all. But by the same token, you know, you're going to get what you pay for, and people that actually go out and buy equipment at not big box sporting goods stores, but more warehouses, typically
right.
wind up, the stuff still doesn't work for them. It can't be adjusted, so you've wasted that money. So I would definitely go to a mid-range club,
right.
but have it to your specs.
Sounds good. Gary, let me bring you in on this, and the question is that Bill has asked is where does he start? If you had somebody coming in, what would you advise them that's just brand new to the game? They've never really gone out and played, haven't really now he didn't I don't recall offhand, I don't think he's even actually been up to maybe a few times when he was younger to a driving range. He's about 35 years old, so you know he's already he doesn't have any bad patterns as far as the golf game's concerned. But Gary, if you were going to advise him, what would be some steps that you would say to him coming into the game? What should he be looking to do? Anything in addition to what we've already mentioned?
Sure. Bill, the first thing I would encourage you to do would be to write down a couple of your goals or your intentions for yourself and why you want to play the game and what the game you think means to you, because there's such a variety there. And then I would like to encourage you to follow the exact advice that Tom and Chuck mentioned regarding interviewing. Really think you should interview a minimum of two and a maximum of five potential instructors. And you'll know because they will meet your goals as well as your instincts will guide you. You know, you'll be able to sense their professionalism and their ability to be prompt. You'll be able to find out, you know, who's going to maybe take you on the golf course a little bit. That would be probably my primary thing that I don't think we've heard yet is I would like to see you get out on the golf course, even if it's just, you know, 50 yards and in for the short game at first, maybe after a session or two. You know, I'd like to see you get a chance to see why you're playing golf shots as opposed to just hitting the ball over and over. I'd like to get a chance
right.
to, you know, have you see what you're going to be doing and why, so you can make some connections, and that typically makes it a little more fun with you, for you. I agree with what Chuck said on the clubs. You know, start with maybe some demo clubs that are going to be close to what you think you'll fit into, and then you have to kind mm-hmm. of talk to that coach or instructor based upon your needs, your budget, you know, and if usually a set of maybe clubs that are a couple years old is a good place to start, you know, if they have those laying around. If not, maybe just go with a few clubs and just learn until you're ready to get that set that's for you. And then the other thing I had down for like another piece of a starting point is I think, you know, it's not a bad idea to find a par 3 course and play that, or play 9 holes at a big course and, you know, drive the ball and maybe you pick up and then play 150 yards and in as you're starting to learn. That way you won't be overwhelmed by having too much ball striking and you'll still stay focused as you get up near the green and things like that, because I think that's important to keep it fun and keep yourself moving and feel some sense of, you know, improvement. So those are my thoughts.
Well, sounds great. Tom, let me ask you, let me bring you back in as well. What are some things that, and again, you know, we're all, you know, professional in the industry and everybody has their own teaching style now, but what are some things that maybe Bill should look out for and maybe take note of when he's selecting somebody to work with?
You know, Teddy, before I answer that, I just want to go back and one of the things I feel very strongly about is, you know,
sure.
so many new players come to the game, and I think that because we're in the game ourselves, we lose sight of the fact that it can be a very intimidating environment. You know, if you go to a range for the first time and you're an absolutely, you know, brand new player and people hitting golf shots around you with some kind of confidence and you're standing there topping the golf ball or, in fact, missing the golf ball or, you know, hitting off the end of the club, you know, it's a very discouraging opening venue for you. And I think that, and I'm sure Chuck and Gary would agree, one of our primary things to do right at the very beginning of this meeting is do everything we can to make that person have some success and feel comfortable in the setting, if nothing else. So I start, you know, very, very close to the hole and around the green for some contact and some reassurance that, you know, the person can actually have some success. I just think that's so vital that in the first couple of visits to the club that they really, you know, are comfortable and they feel like they've done something positive.
Right, and let me just add to that, you know, and that raises a great point, and also another thought comes to mind. You know, I think the industry is starting to recognize now that really working around the green and in the shorter shots is really a great place to start. I know the old school of thumb was, you know, sort of started from the beginning from the tee and worked the other way, but I think a lot of teacher professionals are realizing now that especially for newcomers to the game, to bring them in and get them some success through understanding and learning the short game of it before they throw that big stick in their hands. Because I think a lot of guys, obviously, you know, we've all been there, you know, we want to get out there and with that grip it and rip it mentality. But for a new person coming to the game, that you know, as Gary, I think you indicated that, you know, maybe topping the balls on the range, the last thing you want to do as an instructor is stick a driver in somebody's hand, you know, right from the get-go and have them hitting shots and sort of increasing that intimidation. So I think that, you know, some great points, getting them to work around the green and some of the shorter shots, get them to build that confidence with some success on hitting, because it's certainly a lot easier to hit your shorter irons and things like that than it is to start bringing up some of the longer clubs right out from the get-go. And I think that's some great advice from all three of you. Let me just also add one last thing, Bill. I know that you're tuning into the program. You know, obviously, you want to go and you want to be prepared. It's not, you know, it's certainly not rocket science, but at the same time, you want to make sure that you have a well, you know, well-rounded experience when you go and take a golf lesson, and you want to make sure that you've had a chance to, you know, really, it's almost think of it as a job interview for the instructor. You want to go and interview these people and get an idea of their thought. You want to sort of articulate what it is that you want to accomplish, as Gary had indicated, and give them a better idea. But I think it's important that you maybe take some notes and jot some things down. And don't be afraid to ask questions. And also, you might want to take a look at some of the things that they, a lot of pros will certainly advertise some areas of expertise. If it's sort of in a line with what you want to work on, I think that you want to sort of gravitate to somebody that maybe specializes in an area that's of interest to you rather than just maybe somebody that's just an all-around instructor. Any other final thoughts on that before we move on, guys?
No, I think we all covered it pretty well, and hopefully Bill wasn't inundated with information, but could sift through it and get out there and get going.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure he will, and I'm going to follow up. I told him I would follow up in the next few days after he tuned in, and if he had any other questions, we'll do it. But I think that's a great place to start, and I can remember a lot of people that were new with me and coming out. That's essentially what I said to them is even when they would come to me, I would encourage them to go and meet with other professionals in the area just to make sure that I was what they wanted or somebody else was what they wanted. And some people might not agree with that and say, well, you don't want to necessarily be giving business away. But at the same time, if there isn't that sort of chemistry or sense of connection between the two, then it's not going to be a good experience for either or. And I think it's important that we have to rise above our own interests and sometimes do what's best for the students out there. So some great comments. And I'm going to move on. I've got, as I said, a number of email questions that have been coming in over the last several months since I've been talking about this, and I've filtered out a few of them, and I'm trying to keep in with the same process. And here's one here from actually up in my neck of the woods, not quite this far north, but from North Bay, Canada. Mr. Todd Banks sent in a question, and here's his comments, and then I'll read out his question. His name is Todd Banks from North Bay. Hi, guys. I live in a pretty remote rural area, which has a very short golf season, of course, being up in North Bay. We don't have anything close by in the ways of an indoor facility to practice in the winter. Still pretty cold out here, obviously. Can you recommend some things that I can do to keep my game from going south, before I can get to play again? Thanks, Todd. So essentially what he's asking here, obviously he's like some of the others out there, he's in a deep freeze, and his case is a little bit worse than others. North Bay is quite far north up in Canada, so obviously he's probably going to have at least a few more months before he's going to get out there and get on the course. What are some things that he can do? And Chuck, let's start with you.
Well, Todd, the first thing you can do when you have a very, very short season is you want to develop some kind of practice schedule if you're going to be working on, let's say, mechanical issues, whether it's working on, how you take the club back or how you bring it down or how your body moves. So some of the key things you need for that is you need, number one, if you're able to, I would suggest getting some archery netting, putting it up, and then buy a net and a ball so that you can hit balls indoors. But in lieu of that, always try to practice with a mirror from a face-on view and a down-the-line view so that you can see what your body's doing, because the mirror is going to act like a video camera. So that'll give you some time to look. You can look in the mirror and see what it is you're trying to do and if you're actually accomplishing that. You can also take flashlights and use that to learn how to trace your plane, your base of your plane or your target line, whatever it is you're trying to trace. And then I would also take like an old duffel bag or a gym bag and put some towels in it. And again, do that in front of a mirror, and you can use that as an impact bag to simulate, the club striking the golf ball. And then you can look, again, do you have your left arm, if you're right-handed, your lead arm, we'll say, and your club in line. Is your body positioned to the club? Is your club position to the ball, the hands to the ball, those kinds of things. You can do a lot of work. You can actually build a great golf swing in front of a mirror with impact bags and flashlights.
Some great, great advice. I like that. Gary, let's get some thoughts from you.
Good stuff, Chuck. I hadn't heard a couple of those things before. Thank you. Well, instead of giving the drill to do, I'll give you some concepts, but the Chuck just gave us some excellent drills. I think the first thing is make sure whatever you do work on is the correct thing and the correct information. Too frequently I see students working on the wrong stuff, whether they're swinging in, an office or a barn or at an indoor range, they're doing the wrong things, and really that's not where we want to be. But I'd like to... Todd, to make sure that you fix up the club every day for a minimum of 1 minute, just to keep the movement patterns and the mind-body connection, sort of the neurological connection, happening over the course of time. You know, over time, what happens is we change. We go through slight changes. Our feel receptors change. Internally, our red blood cells change. We're always changing as humans, and the longer you go without having the golf club in your hand, whether it's a putter or a wedge or a 7-iron, the longer you go, the more apt you are to, quote-unquote, lose what you know. It's not like riding a bike. So I think that, if you pick up that club a little bit each day and just work in the office or work in your barn or work in your home or your garage or anything, whether you do or do not have a net, something's better than nothing. And then the last piece I have is just, get a good mindset training program, whether you utilize some of the information that all of us have or you find, another guru that you like to follow. I think you need to keep your confidence up and your visualization and your mind training up. I think it's very important to keep yourself visualizing and pretending and thinking about playing great golf to keep your energy towards the game and more in the groove when you do get back into it.
Perfect. Tom?
Teddy, I love some of the things Chuck said, and I'm a big, big fan of the impact bag. It's something I really believe in. And in addition to that, I like things like the Power Swing Fan. I like the Orange Whip. Orange Whip makes a product called the Hickory, which is a very short version of the Orange Whip, which is really good for people who live in homes with low ceilings. In addition to things that help you with your golf swing, I think that one of the things you have to make a lot of commitment to during the off season is your golf body. So, I think if Todd would visit mytpi.com, Titleist Performance Institute on the line, and look at some of the stretching drills and strengthening drills and balance drills, and get involved in some conditioning things off season, that would be a huge help as well. And then the other thing you can do when you live that far north is you can try to find out the closest location for JetBlue and fly south for a couple of weeks.
that would be my first. Well, that's what I did. So
right, exactly.
And,
who the hell wants to be there all winter? I mean, come on, we got to get south and get some warm weather.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just add just on a couple of the points that you guys have made. I agree wholeheartedly, Tom, with the sort of the fitness end of it. I was waiting to see if that was going to come out, and I'm glad it did. One of the things that I think is really important for any, whether it's somebody that has a shorter season, a winter season, and is able to get a little bit earlier, most of us that have lived up north are going to be looking at anywhere from 3 to 6 months of sort of traditional downtime before we can get back out on the links. And the thing that I see is number one, in addition to not practicing some of the things that we've talked about here, is the fitness end of it. Sure, people go to the gym and things like that, and that's great, but it's not all about bulking up. Particularly in golf, stretching is so important, and as you said, Tom, about going online and seeing some of these great stretching techniques and things like that. But there's a lot of things that you can do if you don't belong to a gym. There's a lot of things that you can do within your house that can help to stretch. For instance, if somebody wants to even try a little yoga, that's been proven to be very effective. I know some guys are a little bit leery about that, but that's becoming more and more popular in the mainstream. There's that to consider. But you can do things very simply. You can stand behind if you've got a large chair or cabinet. You can stand behind that, fully erect and just, twist from side to side and hold those positions and each time go a little bit further. Obviously, you don't want to pull muscles and things like that. So there's a lot of great stretching things that you can do, but that's so important in addition to, working on the swing. The other thing that I've done personally when I was still living up north is, and Chuck, you had mentioned this about, using a mirror and things like that. I had a basement or rec room, and I had a full length mirror, and I used to use it all the time. And after a while, a lot of my family used to think I was conceited because I was looking in the mirror all the time. And I said, "Look, I'm working on my golf game." And what I would do is I would actually make myself a station. I would actually run a fine strip of tape down the center of the mirror just so I could check my spine. But also, I would set a station out on the floor. And I would put an imaginary target what I would believe to be a target. When I was facing the mirror, of course, I play right-handed, so I would have it to my left, and if I was doing a down-the-line view, of course, I would have it opposite to where the mirror was. And I would set up a station so I could check my lines, make sure that my feet, knees, and hips and everything was parallel to my intended target. And then I would, you know, without getting in a posture, I would look in the mirror and just make sure I checked all of those lines to make sure everything, I had a good posture and a good setup. And those are things that you can do in addition to doing the fitness end as well, especially if you have a short golf season. Any other thoughts that any of you want to add to that?
That's okay. For the fitness part, and again, it depends. You have to find your level, and there are different levels. I would recommend plyometrics simply because it trains you not only to get stronger, but to build explosive power in all three of the core locations, your lower, your mid, and your upper core locations. And those are quite, you know, I mean, it's the stuff we use for golf. So I would definitely look into plyometrics as well.
You know, Ted, if I can jump in there, and I love what Chuck says about plyometrics. I mean, if you have an exercise component indoors, if you have a motion component, which is, for example, just one example would be the orange whip, and if you have some balance drills, and you're pretty religious with those things, I think you do yourself a hell of a service over the winter.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's a multitude of things that Todd, that you can do, especially when you have a short season like that. But obviously, the main thing is, as Tom indicated, get yourself a flight quickly on JetBlue and get the heck down here in the south and forget about those cold winters. But that's probably the best advice I could give you right there, is to get yourself down south. There's a lot of great courses, particularly here in the state of Florida. We'd love to have you down here, and there's a lot of great teacher professionals down in this great state that, and really throughout the southeastern part of the United States that you can connect with, and we've got a few of them here on the program tonight. Todd, thank you for your question, and I've got a real easy one here that I think is pretty standard in the industry, and I had to throw this in here. I couldn't resist. We're going to move on to the next. This is by a gentleman by the name of Randy Cope from Topeka, Kansas, and his was short and sweet and right to the point, and his question was, or comment really first, was, I'm a big-time slicer, enough said. So I'm going to start. Well, you know, he speaks it. He figured there was no point in getting into a long, drawn-out story. We've all seen them. I would probably say conservatively 65 to probably 85% of most of the, particularly the higher handicap golfers that come out, have that problem, particularly if they're hitting right-handed. It's a very, very common thing. A lot of great techniques out there. But I think that you have to really observe the individual swing, because there's too many components. I mean, you could very easy to say, well, start with the grip and things like that. But until you understand and see what the individual's doing, obviously we know with a slice, they're swinging from out to in path. And there's everything from the grip to the ball position to their backswing that needs to be addressed. Tom, I'm going to start off with you again. Tom, do you want to help Randy out here?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, you check face and path traditionally first. And I got to go back and expand on the comment you made. I'm a big believer in the way you put your hands on the club is going to dictate what happens with the face of the club. You know, I look at the grip as kind of the steering wheel of the car, and if your hands aren't on the club properly, the ability to control the face or release the face is going to be very, very difficult at best. And although I think pass is a big contributor, I'm face foremost and first. And if you can't control the face of the golf club and you don't put your hands on the club properly, Randy, it's going to be very, very difficult to square that club face on a regular basis and direct your golf ball.
Yeah, grip is you know, something that they don't really, you know, when you're watching a lot of the programs and on TV, and especially the instruction, don't seem to really emphasize enough as much as they used to. And I think too much of the industry has gotten into too many other areas of the swing. Certainly, you know, all of it's important, but I think the grip is really you know, in my opinion, one of the key components, because as we all know, most of us here are certainly seasoned, not only in the profession, but also in our age, and no jabs at anybody by any ways, but we all can remember players like Trevina, who had a very open stance. Many other players had a very closed stance. So sometimes alignment isn't always the most important factor, but grip is really your lifeline, because that's what you connect the club with. So that's definitely a great point. Chuck, let's move on to you. Any other comments or thoughts you want to add to this?
Yeah, I would say that you know, first of all, he's not that far from me. He's in Topeka and I'm in Kansas City. So
there you go.
But the other part is, you know, you have basically three types of slices. You have a straight slice, a push slice, and a pull slice. So, you know, those are path related as well as face. And it can be as simple as grip. It can be as simple as the ball positions. I can also relate to what the body's doing during the swing. So there are a lot of variables. Ultimately, like Tom said, I mean, you know, the hands are the only thing holding on to the club. And if you're a right-handed player, that left hand is what's controlling the club face. Now, if your body's doing something or your path and your face are not conjoined the way they should be, then those are going to create, and the speed of your hips. Those are all factors you have to look at, you know, when you're trying to figure out, you know, this player is slicing and here's why. So, you know, I think as teachers, what we would all do is we would watch, you know, watch him hit shots, and then we would have where we would go to prioritize the part that we're going to attack to either make that into a playable fade. And I think I talked about this last time I was on the show. You know, I get players
right
every day that come up and they want to hit a draw. Well, why? You know, well, they say, well, draw goes farther. Well, that's not true. If all the factors are exactly the same, the ball will go exactly the same distance.
Right.
So I always set one of those orange driveway markers about 10 yards in front of them and set up a very straight line so they're lying directly at that marker, and I try to get them to start 10 balls to the right and then 10 balls to the left, and whichever one they had the easiest time doing, that's the direction we go, and then we just minimize the amount of curve so it always curves to target and not past target.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Some great advice. Gary, you want to jump in here as well?
You know, we joke about this type of thing, about the guy who calls the radio show, or emails the radio show, and we have to fix the slice over the radio. It's not that easy, because there are so many reasons and variables. Very much what you said, you know, they not necessarily does the person have to hit a draw or a hook, not necessarily does it have to be a par fade, but you have to be able to test and see what's going to be more natural. I think the bottom line of it is we want to get that slice less and get them, you know, playing well and playing correctly. What I try to do first is I try to educate, in this case, Randy. I would try to educate Randy and make sure he understands very clearly and within his learning style what causes that slice. In generally speaking, as a law, what causes a slice, and then we would dive into what causes his slice.
Right.
I find most of the time I'm fixing the path actually before I fix the face, because I just want them to understand that their path has to be more to the right of their face, whatever that ends up being. I also find that sometimes the worst that happens is they're starting the ball a little left because their club face is a little closed at impact, and they just start a little left. But if their path is better, they're okay with that because, well, the ball's not going to the right as much as it was. So, I guess to echo what everybody else says, they've made excellent points. I just try to get the education first and make sure that Randy has a very clear picture of what law of science actually causes the slice. And then secondly, you know, once we've diagnosed Randy, what actually causes his slice, and then we can get into the fixes.
Let me just play a little devil's advocate here, guys. I think we all, you know, in the profession, we understand, you know, more about the ball flight laws and why things happen and so on and so forth. Is it a good idea to get into that with a student? Chuck, let me start back with you. Is it okay for us to maybe explain a little bit about why things are happening the way they do, but not get into it too much? Or should we, you know, depending on, I guess, the student, is it okay to get a little bit more, or are we going to give them information overload by doing that, Chuck?
No, I think you have to educate them, because if you, and we've all done this, and we can all verify that if you ask a student, if you tell them what causes a slice, they'll all say their face is open, and they're correct to that statement. But open to what would be the response, right? And if you ask somebody, well, I want to hit, if you say, okay, if you want to hit a draw, where do you aim the club face? Well, I aim it left of the target. So in their mind, that's where they need to go. So if we don't change their mind about that, or you know, anything else involved in those mechanics, then they're going to have a tendency to keep doing those same things. So I don't think it's over-educating them or overloading them to give them a five-minute explanation of ball flight and what controls, you know, initial direction and what controls curvature, and separate the two between face and pass.
Right.
I mean, I do that even with my juniors. They actually have to take a ball flight test. I give them screenshots, radar screenshots, and their job is to tell me what was the face and what was the path.
Right.
Because they have
Very
to
good.
Know that. We can't be with them 24/7.
Right, exactly. Tom, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Teddy, I don't know Chuck very well, but the more I listen to Chuck, the more he and I are on exactly the same page. I think we have a very, very, very strong obligation when somebody puts us on their payroll to answer the question why. If you're not answering the question why, you're not educating the student. And to make the student progress and move forward in this game in a successful manner, they have to understand why. I think it's vital.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Perfect. Let's interrupt just for a second here. It looks like we've got somebody on the line here that wants to call in and maybe has a question for the panel here. Good evening and welcome to Golf Talk Live. You're on with the Coach's Corner panel. Good evening. Hi, you're on with the Coach's Corner panel. Who we got this evening? Hello? I guess we lost that one. Let me see if they might call back. Gary, let me while we're waiting to see if this individual calls back in. Gary, your thoughts on getting into the ball flight laws with some of the students? Is that a good idea in your opinion, or do you agree with?
Yes, I agree that we should be educating on both. I think that the level to which you take it, you have to be able to assess your student and understand, are they a details type person? Are they scientific? Are they artistic? How do they perceive things? And the level to which you take it, I think, is important, and how you deliver that information is important. But I agree with exactly what both gentlemen said so far. Is we should educate as to why, and we should be asking
right.
them questions. Constantly, and I think the more, what I find probably in 9 out of 10 or maybe 19 out of 20 cases is when the student feels self-empowered and they become much more focused upon what I guess we're labeling as what's important, they do much better. Their confidence rises and their ability to not feel lost and confused and need you as, we're always going to be needed. The game's hard enough. But we want them to be able to do a little bit of their own thinking out there, if not a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And the feeling of self-empowerment is tremendously important to confidence and tremendously important to the ultimate result that we're all trying to achieve. And it helps us create win-win relationships.
I agree wholeheartedly, gentlemen. Some great points. Let me move on to another question here. I'm going to keep an eye out here to see if the caller comes back in, but in the meantime, we'll keep it moving. Our third question that I received by email was from a gentleman by the name of Sergio from New York, New York, up there in the Northeast, getting probably pelted with more snow. His comments were essentially, gentlemen, can't break 100. Again, another typical comment. I play pretty regularly but have struggles with my driver. My drives go left and right, so not too consistent. My three wood, not much better. I hit most irons pretty good except for long irons. His question is, should I change things up? Example, using a hybrid maybe off the tee, or what do you suggest? Let me chime in here first, if I may.
Can you repeat that again, Ted?
Yeah, sure. Basically, Sergio's comment is this. He's trying to break 100. He plays pretty regularly, but struggling with his driver and pretty much his three wood and his long iron. So obviously, his longer clubs, he's not too accurate by the sounds of things, but he does hit most of his irons pretty good. What he's asking is, should he kind of change things up to and go with maybe something like a hybrid off the tee to give him a little more accuracy, or what do we suggest to do to help try to break that 100 strokes barrier? And I'm going to start it off here real quick, and then I'll move on to, we'll start with Gary and then Chuck and then Tom. What I would suggest for Sergio is this. When you're trying to make changes, and I don't know, Sergio, whether you're currently taking lessons and things like that, and if you are, then obviously you want to work with your instructor. But here's what I would suggest. If you're having a tough time with the longer clubs, and particularly your driver and even your three wood, here's what I would suggest you do in the interim. You need to obviously work on those areas of your game, but doing it out on the golf course is not the place to do it. You want to do it under the supervision of an instructor, or certainly during your range session. So here's what I would suggest. Pick a club, preferably one of your irons, or if you've used a hybrid, if you're comfortable with that, I would suggest in the interim that you switch and start using that off the tee for the time being. And then what I would do is go to your local teach professional, let him know, him or her, know that this is an area that you're struggling with. And until you feel comfortable and confident that you're able to use those clubs, then you can kind of work them back in. And the reason why I say this is, if you're continually hitting the same clubs off the tee, meaning your driver or even your three wood, and you're not confident with them, what's going to end up happening is in my opinion, it's going to creep into the rest of your game. It's going to lower your level of confidence, and it's going to cause you to start suffering in other areas of the game. And the reason why I want to sort of eliminate that in the interim is to keep that level of confidence up with your other clubs and your game overall, and you will start to see your numbers will start to go down a little bit, because you're going to start getting more accuracy off the tee with some of with a shorter iron perhaps, or even a hybrid club off the tee for the time being. So that's what I would do, and then go with your teaching professional, or if you're not using one, I would strongly suggest that you incorporate that into your weekly, because it sounds like you're playing some regular golf, but you're struggling in a certain area. So I would definitely connect with a teacher professional, have them help work on that area of your game, but in the interim, take that element out of your game for the time being, so that you can at least continue to go out and enjoy it. Gary, you want to chime in?
Sure. Again, as usual, without being able to see Sergio, there's so many potential variables and factors, but based on the information at hand, my first thought would be, if he hits his short irons reasonably okay, and then the problems get worse as we go up with the long irons and the driver, I would think that Sergio's golf swing is probably a little on the sweet side, meaning his angle of his attack into the ball is too downward, or what we call steep. So I'd really work on shallowing out the swing, especially the bottom of that swing, which an able teaching professional should be able to help with. So that's my initial thought process. As far as, getting the ball off the tee, hitting it left and right, that can be definitely from the steepness that we're talking about, as well as, there's probably not a very centered contact point. It might be a good idea to get some face tape on that club and figure out, what's happening. Am I more toe prone, heel prone, things like that. And just trying to get that ball to do one thing or the other. I don't know how far Sergio hits the ball, but I'd rather see it go, as an example, 200 with a 10-yard fade every time, than 240, way off to the left, and 240 way off to the right, and, not in play. So I'd like to see one ball flight with a little bit of a shallower swing. And then the only other thing I had in my head, other than getting lessons from someone, going through the process we talked about at the beginning of the show, is maybe a good short-term fix is just to shorten the golf club in his hands. I don't know anything about Sergio's height and weight or ability, but when you shorten the club, say, by a half inch to an inch, it can offset some of that steepness and tendencies. You know, so these are just things I'm going off of being on the show here. So.
Sure, no problem. Chuck, you have some thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, I would definitely work from 150 yards and in. I'd spend a lot of time doing that. You know, one of the greatest shot makers in the history of the game, Seve Ballesteros, averaged 6 fairways around for his entire career. So, you know, you don't have to hit a lot of fairways to win a lot of tournaments. If you have a pretty good into the green game. So even if Sergio is hitting it, you know, 200 yards off the tee, you know, like Gary said, you can make up for that by having a, you know, world-class short game. I would recognize that as not from 100 in, but from about 130 to 140 yards in. And if you can get it up on or near the green from there on par fours, you can still get bogey golf, and that's going to break your 100 right there.
Okay. Tom?
You know, Ted, I think Chuck and I just disagree for the first time tonight, respectfully. Seve was a dear friend of mine, and I'm sure he's looking down right now, wishing he hit more than 6 fairways in his career. He was never quite satisfied with that stat. So, and he was fine from 150 yards in, as we know. I'm sure our caller doesn't have Seve's hands or short game skill, so we want to fix his driver. So to Gary's point, I very much agree with shortening the golf club a little bit. And in addition to that, I would add loft. I've had a tremendous amount of success with people who have driver problems by doing 3 things. And these are very general comments, and please understand they are general. 1, shortening the golf club. 2, softening the shaft. And 3, adding loft. I think most of the people that come to us with the war club in their hands are playing with too little loft, too long of a golf club that they can't hit the center of the club face very often, and the shaft is generally either too heavy or too stiff. So all that being said, the real answer for Sergio is to go get some help. And instead of buying a $600 driver, go get 6 lessons from Chuck and let him help you.
he threw you a lifeline, Chuck.
That won't quite get 6 lessons.
Okay, I'm sorry, Chuck. I didn't mean to discount your time, but maybe two lessons. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, and I totally agree with what you say about the driver, Tom. I mean, I see that all the time too. But at the end of the day, he's still going to need to go see someone to have that, to have the driver, the loft added, the shaft lighten, the flex, and all that stuff, and length cut down. And part of that issue is that, unfortunately, the drivers today are made at 45, 46 inches long.
Right.
Yep.
And for the majority of the high handicap players, that is just too much war club to try to handle.
I agree.
They'd be much better off, you know, down at the old 43 and a half or 44 inches. I mean, they would be so much better off. It'd be unbelievable.
Amen, Chuck. And let me tell you, I'll tell you a funny story on myself, Ted. You know, I was very fortunate my senior year in college to win an NCAA. And I was always a very good driver of the golf ball, and I'm 55 years old now, and I don't play very much golf, but I still love to play. In the last 2 or 3 years of my life, I've really driven the ball pretty horribly, actually. And it's funny, I pulled my old Tony Tenna persimmon-headed driver out of my golf bag in my closet recently and brought it into my local club repair shop. A fellow does my work for me, and I asked him to tell me the specs of the driver. The driver that I was playing with my senior year in college was, by today's standards, a weak stiff, and it had 12 degrees of loft on it.
Wow.
So I turned around and had a club made for me by the manufacturer I represent, which is Titleist, that was 12.5 degrees at 44 inches long. And what an amazing thing. I've driven the ball better the last 2 months of my life than I have in the last 10 years. What a miraculous thing.
It's amazing. It really does. It really, really does help. And the problem we see sometimes, especially if we get guys that are, you know, let's say they're mid-30s to mid-40s, and they're trying to hit this 8.5-degree extra stiff driver. You put them through a club fitting, and they wind up hitting, you know, like an R shaft at 44 inches and 12 degrees aloft, and they're hitting it on a rope, and then as soon as they find out what it is, they say, I can't play with that.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Okay. So 30 yards longer and straighter don't play into this equation.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. The reason why, and nobody actually commented on it, and I was kind of surprised, but one of the reasons why I suggested in the beginning about sort of removing that element temporarily is obviously it's important for people to be able to work on those. You can't just eliminate them from your game if you want to break that 100 or if you want to improve. But a lot of times I've seen people, recreational golfers playing, and will have a mindset that once they're not driving the ball very well, it affects the rest of their game. So a lot of times what I will try to do is I will, it's almost like, and I hate to use this, especially in this day and age, but it's almost like temporarily removing a cancer, if you will, out of that individual's golf game and remove it aside and let them work on the rest of the part and sort of getting well. And the reason why I say that is, again, I've seen just too many people out there that, and I talked about this recently in one of the shows, how to sort of get through a bad round of golf. And one of the things is from a mental standpoint, if you're not hitting your driver, three wood, or any of your long clubs very well at all, you know, a 10-yard fade you might be able to live with. But if you're a chronic slicer or hooker of the ball and you're hitting it into the woods all the time, it will inevitably affect the rest of your round. So that's why sometimes I don't do it in every case, but certain cases, if it's a really bad tee shot, I will remove that from that equation just temporarily while we work on that separately and sort of help maintain their confidence by getting them out playing with clubs that they are comfortable and confident hitting, whether it be a hybrid or you know, even a short iron, just to allow them to continue to play but sort of remove that element temporarily. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, students are going to, you know, when they come to us, obviously they want help. And if they don't come to us, they think they can figure it out themselves or their friends can help them figure it out. But when they do come and you're trying to make some changes, I mean, a lot of the players that I work with, you know, they're still playing in their typical game every day. So while they may need a lot more than what I'm prescribing, you have to give them enough that they can still go play golf and enjoy the game.
Sure.
Without overwhelming them with and inundating them with information. Now, once you've got them to, let's say, minimize their curve, hit more fairways, hit it a little bit longer, then the other pieces that you want to work on that will take some time, then it's easier to get them to go along with your process. So if you've got a guy, you know, like Sergio, that's having trouble breaking 100, doesn't hit his driver or 3-1 very well, then, yes, I would take whatever club. Here's my ultimate advice, Sergio. Take the longest club you can take and hit the ball in the fairway. So if that's a 5-iron, then it's a 5-iron. If it's a hybrid, then it's a hybrid until you can get your driver straightened out.
I agree. That's really what I was, a shorter version of what I was trying to get out was really, again, you know, it depends on the circumstance. And I realize, guys, that a lot of the questions here are very generic that are being posed here. And without seeing the individuals, you know, we're kind of assuming and guessing. But really, in this day and age, unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, may not necessarily want to take all of the time, so they want to try and get these quick fixes, which is sometimes a little bit of a hamper to you know, professionals such as ourselves, because without actually knowing the student and understanding how they're playing, it's very difficult sometimes to give advice, and a lot of times some professionals are even reluctant to give that type of advice when you're not really familiar with the situation, other than, you know, a few comments. But I think you guys have answered thus far great, and some great advice that I know that these guys, Sergio and the others will certainly be able to take with them. There was another gentleman actually, which I wanted to get in here, but it's kind of along the same lines. His is a little bit of the opposite problem. His name is Masashiro. I'm going to hopefully get this right. Shizuka from Japan sent me an email, again, very short. He said, good evening. I want to get more distance with driver. Can you help? And that was his question. Well, that's the number one thing I think most men out there with you know, a certain element of testosterone still running through their veins want to know is, how do I get more distance? Tom, let's start with you.
You know, I think I hate to sound redundant, but I think, you know, center face contact is such a big deal. You know, we talk about club head speed, but I always keep on going back to center face contact as you know, a primary cause for distance. And if you can't hit the ball in the center of the club face, you really can't generate maximum efficiency. So I always go back to the length of the golf club and the amount of loft, allowing us to post up onto our left side. So to our friend from Japan, you know, I want to know that the driver fits him, number one. I also want to know what kind of golf ball he's playing, and I want to know a lot about his flexibility and his balance capabilities. If he can't balance himself and he can't make an adequate and flexible move, he's not going to be very efficient. So I want to look at his balance and flexibility. I want to look at the driver and the way it's fit, and I want to know that he's making center face contact primarily.
Right, and let me just add there, also age is important as well. If he's a more senior player, you know, his shaft, of course, is something to consider. He may be playing with too stiff of a shaft for his abilities, may need to go to a softer shaft. That can also add into it as well. If, you know, if he's playing with something that's a little bit too stiff, again, he's not going to make great contact with it, and so again, difficulty swinging the club through it. Gary, let me jump to you. Some suggestions for our friend over in Japan. Masashiro is his first name.
Sure. I'll first start by echoing exactly what Tom said. We need to start with center of face contact. I mean, your ball speed's going to go up dramatically once you hit the center of the face more often. You know, it's not about swing speed; it's more about ball speed and the efficiency of the strike. Secondly, I think it's important to, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of power is lost because the golf swing is typically too steep and the person just spins the ball too much. They're just launching it up in the air. They're hitting it high on the face. They're not taking advantage of you know, a correct angle of attack into the ball. So I think it's important to ensure that that club is coming in from more of a shallower position or an angle, excuse me. Those are typically things that we see. And then, yes, of course, as Tom mentioned, if the person cannot balance themselves appropriately or, you know, get into their left side or they're hanging back or whatever type of thing gets in the way, that has to be diagnosed. But really it's the first couple things that I'm looking for, you know, talking on the phone here.
Exactly. Chuck?
Okay, so I have a message for our friends from Japan, so hang on one second here.
Okay.
Okay. Hope they got that. Did you guys hear that?
I could hear it, yeah.
Okay. So that was, thank you for your question. You know, hitting the ball farther, again, that's what everybody wants to do, obviously. And, you know, and I've been fortunate the last few years to be able to hang out with some really smart people that do a lot of studies with launch monitors, to do a lot of studies with the body and what generates speed. This year at the PGA show, we had the open forum too, and we had three of the top biomechanists in the world presenting there. And one of the things they talked about, and they broke down a graph of, if you want to hit it farther, what has to happen? Well, the club has to swing faster. So what are the elements involved in swinging the club faster? Well, the arms, swinging the arms represented almost 40% of the increase in club head speed, followed by the upper trunk and then the lower body. So it was just the opposite of what we would all think. I mean, obviously the lower body starts, followed by the upper trunk, followed by the arms. But the bottom line is the faster you can swing your arms, the more speed you can generate. And if you hit it in the center of the face, you know, that's a big factor as well, because if you swing at 120 miles an hour and you're hitting it heel toe, and you swing at 100 miles an hour and you're hitting the center of the face, it's going to go farther at 100 miles an hour in the center of the face. So, yes, centered contact, you know, finding your club speed, your club head speed is going to have a lot to do whether you should hit slightly up or slightly down on the golf ball to decrease spin and increase launch angle. But for me, the bottom line when I'm watching somebody is I'll see what their body's doing, and then I'll also give them some arm speed drills to get those arms moving faster, and then make sure that the body, arms, and club are all timed together.
Some good points. Very good points on that. Masashiro, if you're listening in or if you tune in later, I hope that you got some great tips here from three top-notch teach professionals in the business here over the United States. So I hope that you will play that over. And anything else to add, guys, before we move on?
No, nothing. I think we've pretty much covered it.
I think you got it. Okay, I'm going to skip one of the questions here real quick and go to a different question just because I couldn't resist this one here. And I'm sure you can probably relate this one more than the previous. This is actually was sent in from Boca Raton, Florida, by a couple, Teresa and Rick. And Rick sort of starts things off. He says, "My wife has decided to start playing golf. I've played for many years, not a bad golfer. I take lessons from a local pro." And then Rick poses the question, and then Teresa poses an individual question. Rick's question is, which I'm interested to see how we're going to go here, should I set her up with lessons with him or her, meaning his pro or her own pro? What do you recommend? So, Tom, let's start with you here on this one. If you have a couple that's coming out and the wife now wants to take up golf, and let's say you're the pro teaching the husband, do you recommend that she also takes lessons through you, or would you encourage her maybe to through an associate of yours? How would you go about that?
I think she has to make that choice herself. But go right back to the beginning of this hour that we talked about the new student interviewing the golf professional, seeing if he or she was comfortable with the relationship. So why would we treat her any differently? She's a golfer just like he is, and she has to make her own decisions, and she has to sit down with me and maybe talk to me a little bit and see if my personality will match hers, and she'll be comfortable with me. If she won't, then I'm not the person for her.
Right. And I agree with that. I think one of the things, let me just throw in a quick comment here, and then I'll move to Chuck, and then we'll go to Gary. One of the things he didn't mention here, and I'm glad that he didn't, because we would probably be adding to the divorce rate, I'm glad that he's decided to look outside of his own abilities. I mean, he indicates he's not a bad golfer, but obviously he's not a professional. He's out taking lessons himself. I'm glad that he's not trying to teach her himself. That would be a big mistake. I've seen that too many times, and it shouldn't be done even amongst friends, but particularly not with a spouse, because that's a quick way to move on to a divorce. But I'm glad that he's doing that. And you're so right, Tom. I agree with that 100%. I think that we have to treat that like essentially she is a new golfer. She's just starting to play, and I think that it's certainly okay for her to talk to your pro or you if you're the pro, and get a feel for things. But also, too, I think one of the advantages of looking outside of that is that is sort of somebody that she can sort of confide in about her, desires to play and what she wants to, and without sort of the fear of the pro sort of relaying that information to her husband in his lessons. So that's something that I think that she has to consider as well. But I agree with that. I think she needs to sort of, circle around and find a few pros that she needs to interview and talk with and find one that feels comfortable. And if she's more comfortable being taught by somebody in the LPGA teaching profession, then she certainly should look that as well and get a well-rounded perspective. Gary?
I agree exactly with what Tom said. It should be the woman's decision, and if they need to talk about it as a couple, that's fine. I mean, there's certainly open room for discussion. Every married couple has their way they go about things, but it really should start with her comfort level and what she wants to do. I can't say it any better than Tom did, I don't think. I don't have anything else to add.
Yep. Chuck, anything different you want to add, or are you pretty much in agreement with...
No, I'm in agreement with the guys. I'm in agreement with you as well. My advice to Rick would always be that, you know, this is what I tell married couples when they come to me, or not married couples. You know, I first ask them, how long have you been happily married, or how long have you been happily together? And they'll say X amount of time. And they'll, well, if you want to remain that way, do not teach each other at all. So...
Right.
So he's doing the right thing. He needs to take her, to let her interview, and then let her make the choice.
Yeah, I agree. It, you know, it's like with any decision. I mean, it's nice to consult with one another, but I agree. I think that wholeheartedly. Let me throw in her question now, which is kind of interesting, really, for somebody that's just sort of start taking up the game. So, and this is something that I believe is very common with women. They tend to be more. But she asked, can you recommend some good drills for chipping? So obviously right away she has somehow in her quest for taking up the game understands the importance of learning the short game. So what are some tips that we can, good drills or maybe tips that we can give her? I know we don't want to, you know, step on any toes as far as any teeth professor, but let's give her a couple of tips anyways if we can as far as chipping. Chuck, we'll start back with you if that's okay.
Well, you know, when somebody is just learning the game, I use a different style or different chipping technique than I do with somebody that is a more accomplished player. But primarily, I like to actually put a 2x4 behind the golf ball, about 6 inches behind it, and just lay it flat on the ground, and then have them set up as a golf ball. Just about their right ankle, lean their weight and shaft forward, have them come down and strike the ball without striking the board. If they strike the board going back, I know they're moving, you know, away from target. If they strike the board coming down, they're typically moving back again, but they're also pushing the club head down too early, so they would hit the board before they hit the ball. And the reason I like the board is because it makes a noise. It won't hurt them.
Yep.
It will bruise their ego, but it won't hurt them or their club.
Perfect. Good advice. Tom?
Yeah, I, Chuck's my new idol. I think that board drill is a wonderful drill. I think the establishing a forward-leaning club shaft in a chipping motion for a beginner is a wonderful way to teach them how to, in some point in their career, become a wonderful iron player. And to establish a forward-leaning club shaft and an angle of attack and compressing the golf ball in miniature, if you will, as a chipper, again, lead them being a better iron player. So I love that stuff. I love that very much, and I think that's a wonderful place to start a new player right there.
Yep.
Perfect. And Gary, I'm going to let you wrap up this question. Any suggestions on some great chipping drills for Teresa?
Sure. Well, two things. The first one is I like to see the forward shaft lean that the gentlemen are talking about. The way I sometimes achieve that is I have them put the golf club against, let's assume a right-handed player. I have them put the golf club right on their left forearm. Grip is actually on the left forearm. And then with the right hand, you grab over the entire club and the arm. It's kind of like Bernhard Langer's old putting grip when he missed in the Ryder Cup and we won. But anyway, so it locks in the forearm and the shaft relationship, so they learn how to not use their wrists too much, and they learn how to get a little bit of forward shaft lean. So that's one thing I do, but you can't make a lot of follow-through with that drill. Otherwise, you're in trouble because you'll fall back to hit it. The second thing I like to teach students to do is I have this joke about what I call the follow-through police, that you know, the minute you miss a chip shot, no matter what you do, somebody comes running out of the trees or a swamp or somewhere, and they start telling you it's because you didn't follow through. And really what happens is follow-through or trying to follow through too much typically leads to too much scooping with the wrists and hands. So I actually like to teach students to punch the ball a little bit, especially those who have chipping problems. I like them to punch the ball a little bit,
how to just keep their lead form and hand more, you know, more flat, straight, and not use those scooping motions. So I like to teach her to punch it. And then sometimes, you know, in addition to what they said about the board drill, I'll put them on a slight downslope to achieve some of the same things. Go from there.
I think they're all great great tips and drills, guys. And the only thing I would add to it is I think the number one thing that you have to do in any type of you know, practice session that you have, whether it be chipping or putting or pitching or what have you, is you have to make it interesting and fun. You have to create some games and make a challenge of it. If you're there with a partner, whether it be your husband or a buddy, kind of make a game of it. You know, there's a lot of great games. You can get all kinds of them on the internet. There's some great books that have been written on some different practice games that you can do while you're out there on the range. And always make it interesting. You know, the worst thing that we can do, and I think we all would agree on this, when you're in a practice session, is if you're just going to go up there and just beat balls all the time and that sort of thing, you know, you're not going to really get any better. And so I think that when you're practicing, whether it be chipping, as I said, putting or otherwise, I think what you need to do is to make it fun and make it interesting, because that actually will help the time to go by. It makes it a little less boring, number one, but also makes it fun and presents a challenge, which gets you ready for going out and playing a round of golf later with your partner or friend, making it challenge. You've already started the challenge right there on the range, and now you're going to take it out when you play on the golf course. So I think that's some great tips from everybody here. And guys, we're getting ready to wrap up here. We've been on, believe it or not, just a little over an hour, and I got my other guest coming up here. I want to thank you very much, Tom and Chuck and Gary, for joining me on this inaugural Coach's Corner. Unfortunately, we didn't get any live callers tonight, but that's okay. I got a mitt full of emails coming in like you wouldn't believe. We have plenty of questions to go through.
Teddy, thank you for having me on. I want to say thanks for having me on. I really appreciate being on and joining these two client specials, and Chuck is now my new item.
If I could only be like you, Tom, I'd be perfect.
Yeah, I sense a little kissing up here after the earlier disagreement. I sense that. Guys, I'm going to just give you a few seconds each, if you will, and I'm just going to go down no particular order. Gary, I'll let you start with you, and then we'll go to Chuck, and then Tom, I'll let you finish off. If there's anything that you guys want to plug real quick, if you want to go ahead and do that and maybe let them know about your website again, go ahead. Gary, if you want to start off, if there's anything you want to plug, let the listeners know what's coming up in Gary's world.
Sure. Anybody can just go to GaryOquinoGolf.com, and that will give you a teaching philosophy on the homepage, as well as the ability to go to any of my different websites. I believe I have four different websites. Depending on what you want, I have a website for mindset training, and then one for the golf swing, and then one for more coaching and my book. So GaryOquinoGolf.com is where it all starts. And thank you much. It's been a pleasure to be on, and thank you to Chuck and Tom as well as you, Ted. Thank you.
Not a problem. And just real quickly, your book, Play Golf Like the Pros, is that available now, and where is that available?
It is on. It's in both ebook and regular form, but it is on Amazon.
Okay.
The best place to get it. Yes, Amazon.
Okay, so it's available now. Perfect. Well, yes. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate you for coming on and joining on Coach's Corner, or the first segment. And I'll be in touch with you in the next
sure.
little while, and we'll get you back on, talk a little bit more in depth, have you come on as an individual guest and talk a little bit more. But I appreciate you joining in on this first Coach's Corner. I certainly enjoyed your input and appreciate it. And thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Not a problem. You take care. Chuck, we're going to let you go next. If you want anything you want to plug?
Well, I mean, if they want to find out more information about me or philosophy, et cetera, they can go to my website, chuckevansgolf.com. They probably, if the listeners are watching the Golf Channel, they've also probably seen the advertisement for my DVD, the Pure Strike 5-Step Keys to Consistency. They can get that through purestrike.com. And I'm at Tiffany Green's Golf Club in Kansas City, Missouri. All the information is on my website. If they want to schedule some sessions, they can do it right through there.
Perfect. Sounds great. And I'm quite sure that Tom is going to be one of the first people after the show that's going to be surfing your website.
I will, absolutely.
and Chuck, I want to thank you as well. Thank you very much for coming on, and I always look forward to having you come on the program. I appreciate your support, and I'd love to have you come back anytime that you want.
Appreciate it, Ted. And anytime, Gary, Tom, I will see you guys. I'm going to dinner.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. See you.
Okay, Tom, you're going to wrap things up here on Coach's Corner. Giving you the last word. Go ahead.
Hey, first of all, thanks for having us on. Thanks for this forum, and thanks for doing what you do for golf for people out there. We're in the business of educating people, and a forum like this, and people can tune in and listen to probably over 100 years of experience teaching the game on air and air their laundry is a wonderful, wonderful forum. So thank you, first of all. Folks can reach me at www.tompatry.com. I'm in Naples, Florida from November through May 1st, and then I'm on the east end of Long Island at a place called Friar's Head from May 15th to October 15th. Doing what I love to do, which is make people play better golf. And Ted, again, thanks so much for letting me join all these great people tonight.
Not a problem. Tom, I appreciate it. Thank you very, very much for your support. And thanks to Chuck and Gary as well for making this inaugural Coach's Corner segment a great one. We're going to stir the pot out there and get some of these people a little more active. But I've been getting flooded, like I said, over the last several months with I've got a stack of emails like you wouldn't believe. So we've got plenty of people out there that want their questions answered. And Tom, I know you're going to be coming back and joining us in a little while. I think I don't have the date in front of me, but I think you're coming in either a month or two. You're going to come back on the panel again and add some more. We'll have some different questions, of course. But I appreciate it, Tom. You're a true professional and certainly an asset to this game, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, and you have a great evening and great rest of your show tonight.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye, sir.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, that was the first, as I said, first Coach's Corner here on Golf Talk Live, and I want to thank, again, my very special guests, PGA Teach Professionals, Tom Patry, Chuck Evans, and Gary Occhino. Apologize, I think I pronounced Occhino earlier in the program, and I apologize, Gary, it is Occhino. And I will read one last time before we wrap up this evening. I'll read their websites out again so you can follow up on it. But thanks, guys, for your input, and hopefully our emailers got some good information from the three here, and hopefully myself as well. I know she's waiting here, and I apologize for keeping her, so I'm just going to bring her out. Good evening, Phyllis. Welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Hey, darling. How are you?
I'm doing well. I apologize for keeping you hold. We ran a little bit longer on the previous segment. We started a new segment this evening, Coach's Corner. Let me just, before we get talking here, Phyllis, let me just very quickly introduce to my group here that's tuning in live around the world here on Golf Talk Live. Let me just bring things up to speed. We're running a few minutes late here. So my special guest this evening that was following our Coach's Corner is, of course, Phyllis Bursey. And although we didn't actually meet down at the PGA show, I have an interesting story that I want to quickly share. And she's the founder of a really great product called MyDab, also referred to as Swing Lube. And I got introduced to this product when I was out at the PGA Merchandising Show in January in Orlando. And the story is this. Probably about a week before, maybe 4 or 5 days before I went down to the show, I had injured my arm, my right arm, a little bit, and had a little bit of swelling. And, of course, being a typical male, I didn't want to do anything and kind of put it off and procrastinate. And, of course, when I went down to the PGA show, I wasn't able to really get into a lot of equipment testing and things like that because my arm was just bothering me. And in my travels around the PGA show, I came across Phyllis's booth and was introduced to this great product, and I just felt it was worth sharing with my listeners. And the gentleman that had helped me at the booth said, you have to try this. This is great. And we put a little bit on the arm, and I kid you not, by the time I walked around the next day or so on that show, the pain was gone and the discomfort was gone, and I had phenomenal relief. So I strongly encourage and endorse this product. So Phyllis, I wanted to bring you on this evening to talk a little bit about that because it was just amazing. I've used other products before. What I liked about this particular product, we're going to get you to talk more about it, is the fact that it's an all-natural pain relief. So Phyllis, welcome to Golf Talk Live, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for the great endorsement. And, you know, I want to tell you, I have thousands of stories like that. You know, you have no idea how many gentlemen and ladies that I met at the PGA show. And one guy in particular, he really, he came over and he had a big lump on his elbow. And he said, will this work? And I said, honey, I don't know. He said, well, every morning I wake up and I have to use my other hand to lift my, to bend my elbow. And I said, well, here, take it, you know, and we'll see what happens. He came back the next day, and he was doing curls with his arm. He said, look at this. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I was so happy for him. You know, it was just, that was important to me. You always want to know that when you're selling something that you can stand behind it 100%, and we do. And the relief is unbelievable for anybody that just tries it. And the relief is in a matter of sometimes as quick as seconds, others maybe even a couple of minutes, but then the relief starts.
Yeah. Well, and what I found, what was very interesting about it, Phyllis, was this. You know, I was out the show actually on the Thursday and the Friday, and as I said, it was probably about 5 days before that I had hurt. And I'll be honest, what I was doing was I was doing some yard work, and I was using some clippers and was trimming some large limbs with these trimmers with this clipper. And I think a couple times what I had done is I was trying to do too thick of a branch. I probably should have used a small chainsaw or something. But anyways, long story short, I ended up, and I think it was probably, if not a tendon, a muscle of some kind anyways. And it started off very faint in the earlier parts of it, but as the week went on, it just got progressively worse, and probably because I didn't stop and I was doing other things. And by the time I got down to the show, I was really upset with myself because I thought, not only did I drive about 5 hours, and every time I would, and it was on my right arm, every time I would grab the steering wheel with my right arm, I would get this sort of jolt. And I knew I hadn't broken anything, but it was just something that had been inflamed. And I thought about stopping off at the drugstore and getting something. And I have used other products, I'm not going to lie, in the past. But after I used yours, it was just unbelievable. So I want you to tell a little bit about the history of it and how it came about and a little bit about your story.
Okay. Well, the product itself is all natural, and I'm Italian, and I was at 7 years old, I lived in an oxygen tent for 1 year, and every day I would pray that I could die.
Yeah.
The doctors gave me 2 weeks to live. My family brought me to Orlando to be with my grandmother. And my grandmother, in 2 weeks, because she always just did natural oils, essential oils, olive oil, garlic. I mean, that's what we grew up with. In two
right.
weeks, I was up running around. And so these have been with me all my life. And I started playing golf about 18 months ago, and when I played, I noticed that people had a lot of pain, and when you'd go into
yep.
into the golf shop, there would be aspirin and Excedrin and all that stuff, but there was
yep.
nothing to help with that pain. So I have a spa line. That's the reason why you hear my dab, and a swing
mm-hmm.
lube is a piece from that. And what I had done was we developed it for lower back pain, your knees, your shoulders. And what I always tell everybody, if you're going to use this product, you put it on at
mm-hmm.
nighttime before you go to bed. You're going to play golf in the morning. Get up in the morning and
right.
apply it again. And then you'll get anywhere from 6 to 12 hours of relief from it. Now, let me promise you, if you have arthritis, there is no cure for arthritis, but we can help you
right.
maintain the pain, meaning that it'll subside and you can play your golf and have a great time. In fact, I was out, I play golf a couple of times a week, and I love it. Thank God it's not illegal, because I'd be in jail. I just love the game. And it's the truth. So I was out the other day, and I was playing with this guy, because I'd gone out on the course by myself, and I played with this guy, and he said that his elbow was hurting him, and I had a little sample, which is what you had gotten, and I gave it to him.
Right.
And he was in his cart, and I was in my cart, and he was riding, and all of a sudden I saw him doing his arm back and forth, and I said, "Is your arm still hurting?" He said, "No, I don't feel it." And he said, and I looked at him kind of funny, and he said, I always have pain, and the pain's gone." And like I said to you, there's thousands of stories like that. And my story to anybody is, listen, if it doesn't do everything that I'll say it'll do and more, you don't ever talk to me again. It's okay, because I don't have to lie about the product. It just sells itself. It's crazy how wonderful it is. And all of your four-star golf courses and five-star golf courses are the ones that are now buying the product. It has moved from the show, the PGA show, which is the first time we had shown it. It had been out, but that's the first time we'd shown it, and they're going crazy. We just had a huge shipment go to Massachusetts today. Ohio. I mean, it's everywhere. And Florida, of course, is one of the biggest buyers because we're here, you know.
Right. Yeah, and that's fantastic. And that's the thing that I like now. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, because obviously, you know, you and I talked about this when we were first sort of setting up the time for you to come on. And shortly after the show, I had called and we talked about this product and about having you come on here and sort of introduce this to my guests, to my listeners. You know, we talked about some of the other products that are out there on the market, and what are some of the differences? What are they going to find in your product or not find in your product that they're going to get traditionally on the shelf, at their local CVS or Walgreens or something like that? What sort of sets this apart? I mean, I know the answer to it, but I want you to share it with the listeners.
Well, this is not a petroleum-based product. It will not stain your clothing. Once you put it on, what I ask you to do is when you put it on, rub it completely around the joint. I want you to leave it wet or clear looking, because the product is actually white, but you will leave it clear looking and then forget about it. If you rub it in, it'll work. But think about this. If a doctor gave you a pill, you wouldn't break half of it and pitch it. And the same principle here. It'll go into your hand, and it's not going to hurt your hand. But if you put it around the leg where it's supposed to be at and don't rub it in, it'll absorb in. It goes deeper into the muscle and joint area. And this is it's not rocket science, darling. What it does is it is a cooling product which brings the blood through the area, which removes the free radicals, brings in antioxidant, which will build and repair.
Yeah, and I know that, and I'm not going to get into the product names, but, you know, obviously there are others on the market that are not a natural-based product, you said, petroleum-based. And a lot of them sort of do the opposite. They use heat, because everybody's always under the assumption that heat is what, reduces swelling and things like that. And that's, as time goes on, science is sort of proving that not to be the case. And the one thing that I don't like, the one thing that I don't like about some of the other products, and here's the reason why really that I wanted to have you on the show. I'm like you. I mean, obviously I'm a golf instructor and play golf as much as I can. I don't get to play as much anymore because I either teach or do other things. But one of the things that, especially as we all get a little more seasoned in our years, you're more prone to and obviously we're not talking major major injuries like a broken arm or something like that, but like much like what I had, you get an inflamed area. And a lot of times people don't want to get hopped up on medications and things like that. Yeah. They want to be able to continue on with their day-to-day life. And the reason why, as I said, I wanted to have you here on the program was because in golf, it's very, very common, even up at the professional level, for people to get this type of injury while playing golf, especially the pros playing quite often, and even some of the weekend warriors out there, as we've talked about before on the show. And there's really... as we learn more and more about some of the products that we're using in our lives, it becomes ever more important to, sort of return back to earlier times in dealing with natural products as opposed to a lot of these medicated products. And I, you know, if there were a stack of Bibles here, I would swear on them. This product is fantastic. It really worked for me while I was at the show. It made life so much easier. And literally within about a day or so after returning from the show, it was completely gone. Mm-hmm. And I had just a small sample that you had provided. And it bothered me, like I said, for over a week. So I know that the product definitely does work. And I know that my audience out there that's tuning in, it's a great product. Let's tell them before we continue on, let's tell them first off where they can get their hot little hands on the product. Tell them, again, the name of the product and where they can get their hot hands on it.
Okay. The name of the product is Swing Lube, and you can find it at www.swing-lube.com.
Okay. And they can buy that online, and you said also some of four- and five-star courses now, or some of them are starting to pick it up, so it's moving into the pro shops as well?
Yes, that's where, yes. It's just gotten crazy on me. I think people had to go back. I've had so many people call me and say, where can I buy it? And we're just now getting it into the shops. You know, the big orders are just coming in, and they're moving out now because this is so different. You know, if you think about it, when you go into a pro shop or a golf shop, there's nothing in there for you all except an aspirin or an Excedrin. Who wants to take that stuff? And golfers have that back, the knee, the shoulder pain, and their hands, and this product works on all those things absolutely wonderful. And then the other thing that they might get from being out in the sun is a headache, and we do have another product for that, which is called Solus.
Okay. Very good. Now, obviously, you know, something, too, that people need to understand is for those that maybe are at their local pro shop, and if you're not carrying it in that pro shop, then I would strongly suggest that you listen to the show and relay that information to the buyer and get some of this in stock, because I guarantee it, it's going to literally fly off the shelves. It's a great, great product, and I can't emphasize enough. And you and I are going to talk at a later time, Phyllis, about maybe doing something through my website here for the program, about making it available for purchase through that as well. And I think it's a great product. And I certainly, you know, I don't endorse everything out there, but this is something that, you know, I can attest to personally that I've used and in my moments of pain. So I know that it works, and I have no problem in letting the listeners here in on the secret, if you will. Hopefully it won't be a secret for much longer, but we'll continue to do that. If there's really one thing, Phyllis, that you want the listeners to know about the product, what would it be, and why?
Well, I think that the one thing I want you to know is that there aren't any steroids in it. Everything is all natural. And the other thing that I want you to know is that if you use it like we instruct you to use it, it works like nobody's business. And, you know, the slogan is on our website is no pain, all game. So, and that, you know, we want you to go out and have a good time. And think about this. If you don't have any pain, you're going to play more golf. And that's what it's all about. I'm crazy for golf. So come on, guys, let's play. And hopefully I'll get to see you on the golf courses, because I have the best time when I get out. I'm normally solo. And by the way, it was cute because I was taught how to play golf by Greg Anderson, and he's just so sweet because he took me to the driving range, and he's left-handed, and so I mirrored him, and I learned how to play with him, and he has severe lower back pain, and we used a product on him, and so I knew that it kept him actually from surgery. That's the truth. And if he can do it, and it's done that, and sometimes that pain would have him doubled over, and you put that on his back, and he's up, and he's going in a matter of minutes. And again, I'm going to tell you that it's a cold product, and that hot is from capsaicin, which is cayenne pepper, and, you know, that burns the skin. It's not. And then there's other products out there that numb on the surface. This product does not numb on the surface. It's got something in it called catalyst-altered water, It was developed over 50 years ago for burn victims to get meds up underneath blistering. So that's the reason why we ask you to lay it on wet and let it absorb in. It'll absorb in a matter of seconds. It's just gone. If you rub it on your clothes, it will make your clothes wet for a moment, and then it'll dissipate. It's gone. No staining, nothing.
Hmm. Wow, that's incredible. And you know, the thing that I like about it is, and again, going back to golf for a second, you know, injuries like the back and even the shoulders and things like that are very, very commonplace, really in any, you know, it doesn't have to be a contact sport. But golf, you know, you're using your core and other, you know, you're using really your whole body, and it's very easy, especially for somebody that plays a lot of golf, to be prone to injury. And we're no way, let me just, you know, sort of put a disclaimer on this as well. We're no way, shape, or form saying that this is going to cure, you know, arthritis or things like that.
No.
That's not what the product is about. What the product really is about is to offer relief in a natural way for some of those, you know, really minor injuries. Obviously, if you're, you know, doubling over and having severe injuries on a consistent basis, then obviously you want to consult with your physician and get it resolved that way and find out if there's an underlying problem. But for obviously, you know, when you're playing around, sometimes those aches and pains come up just through normal play and things like that. And this is a great product to alleviate that and allow you to be able to enjoy, you know, and that's the great thing, like you say, because it works so quickly. You know, you could be out in the front nine and maybe hit a bad shot or two and feel some discomfort, and you can rub this product before you get to the 10th tee and literally within a matter of minutes, you know, feel relief. So you can continue on playing and as opposed to having to head back to the club clubhouse and packing the clubs up for the day.
Mm-hmm. I've played with gentlemen out on the course and they've had pain, and I've given them the product and they've just raved, like, oh, you saved my day. There was a man, and his name was Don, and I saw him on the golf course. I was actually talking to one of the pros there, and he overheard me, and he said that, I said, what's the matter? Don't you feel good? He said, no, I have a headache. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let me see if I've got something in the car. I don't know. And I went out, and I did. I had the Solace, and I put it on, and I ended up playing with him and his brother and brother-in-law. So it was the four of us, and I rode with him, and he said to me, Phyllis, I want you to know you saved my game today because I could play and enjoy it. And then the sweetest thing, I had given him the swing lube for his knee because he has trouble with his knees, and I said, go ahead and put it on because I noticed that his knee was bothering. He said, no, he was saving it. His wife has Parkinson's disease and pain with it, and so he called me about 3 days later, God bless him, and he said that she was having trouble sleeping, and he had put it on her, and she got to sleep all night long. So he was very pleased and was ordering the product from me. But what wonderful love. He saved that product. He was in pain, but he saved that product for his wife that he loved dearly. So it was important.
Wow.
It was really nice. Yeah, and that made me feel so good. And the funny part is, as I had more in the car, I would have given it to him, but it just didn't dawn on me until after it was all over with what he was saving that for, you know. So.
Well, that is certainly great. And as I said, you know, I'm just, you know, sort of taking this from your site. You know, you're not certainly making any health claims, and you're certainly dedicated and making, you know, a top-quality, all-natural product. You're not claiming, you know, a cure for any condition that they may have in the products. The one thing that really caught my eye, and I certainly like this, is your products have not been nor will ever be tested on animals. That's certainly important as well because, you know, obviously we know that some of the larger pharmaceutical companies and things like that have been caught in the past of doing that. And I'm a firm believer if you can't, test it in other means without having to, you know, test it in that manner, then there's something wrong. And I applaud you for doing that and for sticking steadfast on that rule, if you will, and not testing it on an innocent animal. I'm a firm believer if you can't test it on yourself, you don't need to be testing it on somebody else.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the truth.
But but it's certainly a great product, and as I said, I can attest to it. Phyllis, before I let you go, if you want one more time, just to let the audience listeners here know where they can get their hot little hands on this, and we'll go from there.
Okay. It's www.swing-lube.com.
Perfect. And how is it purchased? I mean, is it they can get an individual bottle, or is it packages, or how
they
is it packaged?
Yes. It's packaged. It comes in 8 ounces, and they can get it online. And then what we'll do is we'll include one of those little samples like you have, because if we
right.
if we put that to you, if we put it in the package, then what you do is you keep that with you. So when you're on the golf course, you'll just if you start hurting, you take it out and put it on. And then when it's empty, take it back to the big bottle, put it back in, you know, fill it back up, and then put it back in your golf bag. But remember, if you're going
right.
to really enjoy your game, or you really want to beat the boys, what you're going to do is put it on the night before, then in the morning when you get up. That's what you do.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Phyllis, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live. I appreciate you spending some time with me and talking about Swing Lube. It is a fantastic product, and as I said, I was down at the PGA Show for a few days and got to see a lot of different things, and yours was certainly one of the things that I saw down at the PGA Show this year, and I can certainly bet with the success that you've enjoyed this year that you're going to be back next year. I'm sure at the show again, and it sounds like it's really taking off, and I'll certainly do whatever I can on my end to continue to help spread the word about this great product. And thank you for joining this evening on golf. Not a problem.
Anytime.
And I will talk to you.
I
will definitely do that, and I will talk to you very soon about getting this available through my website as well. Phyllis, thank you very much. You have a great evening, and God bless.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I'm just going to take a few moments here just to wrap up just a couple of things that I'm going to close off for the evening. I want to thank you for joining me here on Golf Talk Live. And as I said, we had a great Coach's Corner, great way to start off this Thursday evening here in March, the first Thursday of the month, with a brand new segment here on Golf Talk Live, Coach's Corner. Had a great panel on Mr. Tom Patry, Mr. Chuck Evans, and Mr. Gary Occhino joined us this evening. We got through a few questions. Didn't have, unfortunately, some live callers tonight. I think we did one, but he might have got cut off or changed his mind. But we had a number of email questions. Please keep them coming in. I'm going to tell you one more time how you can participate in the Coach's Corner segment, and then I'm going to talk very briefly about something new that's coming up. You can certainly talk at any time here on Golf Talk Live. You can certainly tune in every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, and the link to tune into is at www.blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, and that's every Thursday live at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time till 8 p.m. Central Standard. To speak with the guests at any time, particularly now that we've started the Coach's Corner segment, that's going to be the first hour of every Thursday from here on in. You can call in at area code 646-716-4667. That number again is area code 646-716-4667. Or you can email questions like some of the others have done. You can email at questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Or if you want to email me, if you're a club professional or a teaching pro out there or somebody in the golf business and you want to come on Golf Talk Live as one of my guests, or you want to participate, if you're in the teaching profession, you want to participate not only as a regular guest on the show, but in the Coach's Corner segments, you can email me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. If you want updates on the show through social media, you can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. That's facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Certainly appreciate those that are following me, and also appreciate you throw a few likes my way. For those of you that are following me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is TedAndBuckCEO. That's Ted and Buck and CEO in caps. And make sure that you check out the Golf Talk Live website at www.golftalkliveblog.com. I want to thank, again, my special guest this evening on Coach's Corner, Again, PGA Teacher Professional and Top 100 Teacher voted by Golf Magazine, and the author of The Six Spoke Approach to Better Golf Learning, Mr. Tom Patry. And, of course, alongside him, his newfound mentor, Mr. Chuck Evans, who is also a PGA Teacher Professional in the Top 100 Golf Magazine. And he's also an author of How to Build Your Golf Swing, Mr. Chuck Evans. And, of course, last but certainly not least, Mr. Gary Occhino. I'm glad I got it right finally. He's also a PGA Teacher Professional and author of a new book that's just come out, available at Amazon.com. It's called Play Golf Like the Pros, and you can get that at Amazon.com. And just to recap quickly the websites for the three guests, for Tom Patry, you can get more information and connect with Tom for some lessons or other information. You can contact him on his website at www.tompatry.com. For Chuck Evans, it's at www.chuckevansgolf.com. And for Gary Occhino, it's www.GaryOcchino.com. That's GaryOcchinoGolf.com. I want to thank those gentlemen very much for joining me this evening, and hope to have them back in the future for future episodes of Coach's Corner and just to talk golf like we do so well here on the program. One last thing I'm going to do is let you know about the other show that's coming up here in April is the Women of Golf show, which is coming up on April 8th. For those of you that want, that's going to be an entirely different broadcast under the Golf Talk Live umbrella network, and that is going to be starting on April 8th on the Golf Talk Live network. It's going to be every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that will be an hour-long broadcast. I'm going to be joined from time to time. I'm going to be joined on the first one for sure on April 8th by none other than LBGA Teacher Professional Cindy Miller. She's going to be help co-host on this brand new Golf Talk Live program, The Women of Golf. And on that program, of course, we're going to tackle many of the important topics that have been facing women in the golf industry today, everything from equipment, coaching, health, and, of course, accessibility or lack thereof. I'm going to be talking with everybody from some of the best players on the LPGA Tour to some of the teachers out there, lady teachers out there that are teaching in the LPGA, as well as some women in the corporate world. So lots of great things coming up, and I'll be keeping you updated as we go on. It's getting close now, just a matter of a few weeks, and that'll be launched on April 8th at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That'll be an hour-long broadcast, and we'll be having some great great guests and some great information that will be helping you with the ladies out with their game. So ladies, make sure that you spread the word and tune in every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Golf Talk Live new launch on April 8th called The Women of Golf. So make sure you tune in for that. I want to also thank, again, my other special guest this evening, Ms. Phyllis Bursey, and for coming on and sharing really about a great product called Swing Lube. It is a fantastic product, and as I mentioned several times throughout the latter part of the broadcast, I had some minor injury going down to the PGA show this year and just happened across her booth there at the show and managed to try a little bit of the product, and within literally a few days it was gone and certainly got instant relief. So thank you, Phyllis, for coming on the show and sharing that. And always I want to thank you, the listeners out there. I want to take this opportunity to thank all the listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each and every week. I've had the pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly talented coaches, teacher pros, authors, and entrepreneurs stop by Golf Talk Live every week, much like the guests I had this evening. And it's with their participation, guest appearances, that have really helped to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. So thank you to all of you guys and gals that have come on the program here in the last year. And I want to give a special thanks to some sponsors and supporters of the program, Mr. Jonathan Laird of South Coast Golf Guide. He is the owner and the my memory is escaping me now. I can tell I'm going to be turning 50 in a week. He is the owner of South Coast Golf Guide, and he has a great publication here in the southeastern part of the United States. If you're looking to find some courses, some great top-notch courses in the southeast, from literally from Mississippi right down through to Florida, you want to pick yourself up a copy of South Coast Golf Guide. And if you are looking to advertise in the guide, you can contact Jonathan personally at jonathan@southcoastgolfguide.com. Also, thank you to Meredith Kirk, and she's the 2014 Mrs. South Carolina. She was crowned that glorious title last year, towards the end of the year for 2014, and she's moving on to the Mrs. America contest coming up in August of this year, so much luck. And she's also a great LPGA teaching professional. She has her own program out in the Myrtle Beach area, which she also runs a Endless Golf, a Myrtle Beach magazine, which she's also involved with. You want to check that out at endlessgolf.com. I believe actually it's endlessgolfmagazine.com. Also to some great followers of the program and help spreading the word is Nikki and Tiffany Litherland from Down Under in Australia. And I know that they've been helping to spread the word here for quite some time. So thank you guys for helping out and spreading the word. And, of course, to Mr. Bernie Pinder, founder and president of Ontic Golf, a great line of custom-designed and built putters. Can't get any better than that. Mr. Bernie Pinder, thank you very much. And for my good buddy over in Ireland, Mr. Peter Doyle of Doyle Golf Solutions. Thank you, Peter, for always tuning in and offering your support for the program. And all the rest of you out there that tune in every week, thank you very much. Have a great weekend, everyone, and I will see you here next week, Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, with a brand-new Coach's Corner segment right here on Golf Talk Live, and another great, exciting guest to follow after the Coach's Corner. Excuse me. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend, and I will see you here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on Golf Talk Live. Good night, everybody.